Hello and welcome to the Pocket Dojo podcast, the show where we talk about making the world a better place by making better things. I'm Paul Crick.
And I'm Arsh Singh.
Today, it's Arsh's turn to lead the conversation. So let's dive in.
So today I'm talking to Catherine Long. He's quite a well-known regenerative practitioner in the fields of leadership and organizational development. Catherine's also a good friend. And so I think in particular, I'd like to invite you, Catherine, welcome you first to the show. Thank you for accepting the invitation. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Absolutely. Maybe just to start our conversation, you know, share a little bit about yourself and the kind of work that you do, and then we'll start to explore that together.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And it's funny, I was reflecting today just because of something that somebody had posted up on LinkedIn about homeschooling, actually. And I realized that actually my kind of early stages in life, I wasn't homeschooled, but it was something not too far away from that, where, you know, the school was kind of 20 children, and we just divided into two classes. So you're working across different age groups, lots of unsupervised time. The school was right in the middle of a lot of, you know, forest and hills, mountains and stuff. And when we had tremendous freedom, and I think that has imprinted me in ways that I can't possibly kind of, you know, I wouldn't have known at the time. And sort of over the years, you kind of realize, yes, that, and of course, other experiences have a lot to do with who you become in the future. And so that was in the north of Japan. I grew up there, and I was sort of, that was home until I was probably into my 20s. I would just divide my career into, first bit was teaching English as a foreign language and going around the world, and then eventually start focusing more on cross-culture, communication, that sort of thing. And then from that evolving into the coaching space, where actually fairly soon I did a lot of coach development and education, sort of involved in the program side of it. Right. And then probably last 10 years, much more a practitioner, leadership and organizational development. And in having the freedom to develop my practice, realizing actually living systems principles, I didn't necessarily have a word for it at that point, but then I think, as with many of us, we sort of find each other and find a language and describe and make sense of who we are and what it is that distinguishes the work that we're bringing into the world. Yeah,
absolutely. It's fascinating, isn't it? You know, the different roots, the different stories that we all, you know, bring with us to the present about how we came to be doing, Catherine and I do similar kinds of work. So, you know, how we came to be doing the kind of work that we do today, it's so rich at the end of the day, which is fantastic. So let's bring in the topic of the specific word, let's say, of regeneration, which is, you know, often, yeah, absolutely, you know, being used in a lot of different ways today. And that's part of what we really want to kind of speak to with the podcast. You mentioned living systems principle, which are, you know, a clear part for those of us, at least, you know, working in the field who do this kind of practice. How is regeneration integral to your life and your work today? Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, and just maybe before I do that, just a point of clarification, because I think for me, living systems principles and ways of being is more encapsulating than the word regenerative, because in life we have regeneration and degeneration, you know. And so if we think about the health of our soils, it requires that things break down and actually get reincorporated. So I think there's something around learning to work with those season cycles of regeneration, degeneration that are happening all the time. How do I do that?
Tell us a little bit.
I suppose, you know, when you start thinking about your life and its meaning and purpose through the lens of, you know, being part of the super organism that is Gaia, that is the Earth, and then really surrendering to a sense of, well, what am I called to? What's the role that my organism is called to play within this bigger piece? And I feel as though that once you loosen a lot of the logics that we grew up with through education, and I didn't have it so much around roles and jobs and expectations like that. But you realize that actually the basis on which you make decisions, and that you reach out to things and you respond to things, or you intuit. I think intuition has a really big role to play.
Absolutely.
In this, because just as in living systems, like, you know, organisms are tuning into, like, where's the nutrition? Where am I supposed to be going? Feeling their way into the different spaces. And I think that that's very resonant for me, and I think for a lot of people that are on this pathway, right?
Absolutely. You know, I think it's, you know, we often use the expression in other fields about the North Star, you know, the thing that guides you and holds you, gives you a sense of orientation wherever you are, as long as you can see, obviously, or, you know, sense into whatever. And I think that that sort of inner compass is powered, if we like, by intuition for many of us today, you know, which is quite different to how most of us at least have been educated to operate, you know.
Yeah,
it's really key, you know,
and that then is a whole body thing, right? So I've always known that I'm quite good at tuning into, you know, the coming waves of this, that, and the other. You know, I haven't always known what to do with that, but
sure.
I think that's, again, through our collective, you know, we talk about collective intelligence, but I think that occurs on very superficial, fear-driven levels. That is not really intelligence, but often gets framed as such. But actually, when we can tap into, at an embodied level, what are we sensing? What are we all tuning into here? What are we picking up? And how do we use that intelligence together? Then I think that's when we're acting within a kind of, I would say, completely coherent, but it's like that shared field, the ground of being that we are then able to all tap into, that again, I think is an expression of ourselves as of nature, a part of nature, how, you know, how we want to language that, and seeing that, you know, that we have a consciousness that links to the consciousness of all things. So, yeah.
Beautiful. Which is what, you know, in a sense, is part of how I would describe regeneration, you know, thinking about how we language stuff and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there are, you know, cycles which are very different and very necessary for that, you know, expansion to happen. It also sounds really healing. You know, I know you do work in the field that I might describe as healing. Mm-hmm. So what does that look like in practice for your work today, let's say?
Yeah, and I'll probably just come back to the word healing, because I find that people have very different responses to that word. I'm okay with that, because I think sometimes it's through the reaction to words that we actually then tune into, or what does that mean, or where is my reaction coming from? But healing, as in, you know, going back into its etymology of wholing, of wholeness, and by that I don't mean a kind of static fixed whole, like a reset, you know, like this is often the way that it's thought about today. I just want to go back to a point where I didn't feel like this, or to some sort of completion, as opposed to actually there's a constant process of integrating, and through that integration evolving. And so when we think about healing in that way, and we think about actually miraculously, you look around you, in spite of the state of the world today, even the most depleted soils and rivers and everything, and our own bodies, right, and communities, given the right conditions, have the capacity to heal. and reliably so. So it's just, you know, I always, you know, back in the day of, you know, all sorts of spiritual conversations and this, that, and the other, and people ask the problem of pain and why does God allow this, that, and the other. And that, for me, it's almost like the opposite. It's like, well, how come if you give things the right conditions, they can heal? Isn't that just like an amazing aspect of our universe, that it has that capacity? It's self-organizing, you know, autopoiesis, you know, all of these wonderful terms that we talk about in complexity theory are just present and innate as part of healing, right? So so when my kind of inquiry, I guess, over the last few years is, given that this is a ubiquitous shared property, how do we understand it better? How do we participate and partner with the healing that is always present and wanting to happen, as opposed to seeing it as, oh, this event, or, you know, if we're lucky enough, you know, maybe something good, but there's a lot of kind of almost superstitious, magical thinking around healing,
right.
As opposed to actually, there are some core principles that if we learn to apply them, and without attachment as well, I think, because we can't say, I want healing here, this part of my life, but over there, not so much.
I'm fine. Absolutely. It doesn't really work that way, does it?
It doesn't really work that way, because guess what? It's about healing, you know, exactly. And I think we've had so much confusion around it, and it itself has been sliced and diced by different modalities or different practitioners that will say, you know, this is the way you do it, and then exclude everything else. So it's bringing some wholeness and healing back into the space of healing as well.
Yeah, beautiful. So that, you know, that sounds to me like that is very much a property of living systems, isn't it? That we, with you know, right awareness, perhaps, I don't know if that's the right term that you might use, but it's the one that's coming to me as we're talking, you know, with awareness of what we're able to do, healing is a natural thing that happens, you know, whether we want it, like you say, it can't be in just over here and not somewhere else. It happens, you know, whether we ask or look for it or even allow it, quite frankly, you know, it happens anyway, because we are living systems. We're part of nature, and nature is always degenerating, like you know, said at the beginning. So, you know, bringing that a little more perhaps into some of the arenas that, you know, we both move through, that we work in, etc. What does a healing-centered approach to change mean or look like?
Okay, so yeah, it's a really good question. Hope I can do it justice to a response to that. I just kind of almost want to caveat or contrast with.
Sure.
I think what we've got at present is often a trauma-informed approach to change, if that, you know. But where we are starting to think about it is very much based around trauma and looking after or being sensitive to how that impacts individuals and communities, and rightly so. You know, there's a sort of caretaking that needs to happen around that. But what we know about that is that then identities get kind of almost entrenched into a trauma identity. And so, for example, I'll just use something really simple. I was running an away day recently with a team, quite a large team, 20 or so. And we taking a healing approach to how they form as a team is very much around, actually, you know, healing is always relational, right? So it never happens without relationship of different parts or quality of relationship, or kind of shifts within that. So even in a simple exercise, for everybody to be able to experience themselves more deeply connected to each other, and in a better understanding of how I function, how you function, and therefore how we can support each other's better functioning, and have a conversation around that in a whole circle, you know, with, I mean, for some groups, that's kind of normal, isn't it? But it's surprising, well, not surprising, actually, for many groups of people, they've never done that.
Sure.
So, of course, it brings into awareness. And what I'm saying is not rocket science, right? It's not like, you know, it is that kind of normalization of, oh, there are some practices that we can hold where people feel safe, where they can reconnect with each other in a different way, feel each other's support, and think about how they might want to carry that forward. So even in that small example, we can see that, you know, it's about working with the relational. What are the parts that want to kind of move or come together or not come together, right? So, working at that relational level, working in at the level of process, you know, you can only work with the system from where it's at. And I think this is one of the challenges, is that a lot of people wanting to drive, I use the word drive, consciously as well. Absolutely. But, you know, have an idea of where we should all be to save the planet or whatever. It's like, but how are you going to work with people where they're at? How do we really tune into? If we force people past the point of where they are, they're only going to be bringing these trauma patterns with them. And I really feel as though there's a risk within so-called regenerative community and elsewhere that we're not paying attention enough to, we are real ordinary human beings with real ordinary needs that otherwise just get pushed into the background and not integrated into this change, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. You've sort of anticipated my next question, actually, which was, you know, why is healing or the increased, let's say, awareness of living systems and living systems principles theory, however we want to describe that, why is that so core to regeneration? Let me just kind of add a little bit there as well. I think, you know, there is growing awareness actually within the world in general, whether that is thinking about well-being in the workplace, or whether that's, you know, people in the so-called regenerative movement, which might look very different in different places around the world and what have you, you know, becoming more, I use the word, carefully as well, conscious of the stuff that we bring, to any situation. So, you know, our guiding light, if you like, for this series of the podcast is all about the spaces between us. You know, who do we bring of ourselves into any situation, and then how do we show up, you know, with the others, which, you know, we're all to some extent at least influenced or constrained or, you know, enabled, however you want to describe that, by the people that we interact with. We don't just act in a vacuum and all the rest, particularly obviously not in an organization of any kind, whatever the culture is, etc. But, you know, how, let me rephrase my question. I'm sort of drawing different things together and thinking aloud, let's say, which might not always make sense to everybody else, but I hope I can, you know, make some sense of it. It feels like that's so key, actually, I think is what I want to say, to being able to regenerate, whether they're, you know, in the fact of doing that, there are things that need to die back. You know, I mean, it might need to compost and hospice. This is something that we've been, you know, thinking quite a lot about. And I know you have, you know, two in conversations that we've both taken part in. You know, we need to compost and hospice lots of things which are really hard. You know, it's hard to let go of all those things that, excuse me, at least, you know, in this part of the world, most of us have been very lucky to enjoy and have opportunities for, or, you know, whatever it might be, and sort of take for granted to a certain degree. And then, as you say, you know, a lot of that's sort of been harnessed into certain narratives and ways of thinking about the future and whatever that, you know, may or may not be useful. That's a different conversation. But, you know, the importance of being aware of who we bring, like I said, you know, into any conversation feels just, you know, so essential. So I'm going to ask the question slightly differently in that, you know, where are some examples of this kind of approach to change, you know, this willingness to think about or become aware of the healing that's happening anyway, whether we, pay attention to it or not, or the opportunity for it. And you know, then when we do that intentionally, what sort of examples are you noticing around?
Yeah, I do often go to, you know, the most kind of basic and earthy examples that we can relate to rather than the kind of abstract conceptual. And I find a lot of inspiration in the area of regenerative agriculture. Because there is a kind of, you know, again, if we accept that all of reality is essentially fractally constructed, what I see there is a really positive spiral of reconnection to the soil. So there's a healing in the relationship to land. There's often a lot of kind of decolonization happening in terms of thinking rather than doing to, but participating with and rediscovering traditional practices, which may be also indigenous practices or just from people's previous heritage that they've kind of lost along the way. It's forming a lot of community between whether you're a rancher or whether you are growing vegetables or fruit or doing permaculture, but actually bringing people together across quite big divides, actually, what have become big divides in a polarized world, but actually recognizing how all these different processes, what's appropriate in terms of the bioregion that you're in and the etc. And actually seeing that people are flourishing, you know, it takes time, it takes hard work, but actually over time, there is that healing and flourishing that's happening. And it's happening very naturally without the need for lots of exogenous, you know, input, chemical inputs and stuff like that. So potentially the rivers are healing, there's all sorts of stuff going on. There's biodiversity that's improved. And so I feel when we tap into where genuine healing, there's always this virtuous spiral that's happening, and it's hard. It becomes hard after a point to pinpoint which bit is the healing, right? So, you know, and of course, we all know things like the stories of the kind of wolves of Yellowstone Park, whatever, you know, sort of, again, that was a relational thing of a part of the system that had been excluded being brought back in,
reintroduced,
and then finding it, then the system finding its new balance, you know. So I think there is something around when we attend to the four conditions, then we can be in a place of trust that actually whatever is needing to happen here is going to happen, rather than, and you know, I've written recently about, what if we didn't frame everything as a crisis? And that isn't, absolutely, I'm not trying to be facetious there and say that there aren't important problems in the world, but actually what that crisis thinking does is it tends to shut down our creativity. It shuts down any commitment to long-term or longer-term options. Mm-hmm. And if we're talking about healing, we're talking about living systems, time is a big factor. You know, so how are we allowing for that to happen rather than getting frustrated or feeling, oh, you know, nobody else understands, or, you know, again, I've written about recently about the early majority that I think is coming, you know, that there is a wave of people and organizations that are really interested in this and really curious, and they see something attractive and they see something different, whether it's because they've been had a day out in the woods and, you know, sat around a campfire for a change, whatever the reason is, you know, but they're attracted to it. And so if we want to widen you know, those of us who might be early adopters, etc., we need to be willing and ready for these people to join in rather than keep building gaps and barriers to them feeling like, you know, and it just like all of us took time to learn. It's going to take time for them to learn, and it won't be perfect from day one and
absolutely
all the rest of the, you know. But I really feel as though that is also the healing work. The healing work is to create a bridge, a welcoming bridge, you know. And we've had these conversations. I think the next year is going to be really bumpy for a lot of us.
Pretty bumpy for the last four or five, but yes, quite, I agree.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. This is going to kind of really be felt on a big scale.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree.
So let's use this time to be ready, because that won't be forever, but you know, it's going to disrupt a lot of stuff. But then let's be ready when we come out of that, God willing, you know, that actually then we create these, or we're already creating these bridges for people to kind of rebuild or regrow or whatever the word is, differently, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Wonderful. So I'm going to throw a slightly different question in here now that we haven't, it's just, you know, rising while we're talking.
Both.
And I don't know, we can answer it, but we can sort of point to some ideas or something maybe. So I'm just curious, Catherine, you know, when I hear you, listening to you talk and obviously, you know, being friends and all that kind of, all the other parts of relationships and stuff. When you know, pay attention to the healing that's happening for yourself, you don't need to share that with us, and what's regenerating around you, what seeds or emerging shoots or, you know, whatever stages of things might be, you know, are you sensing into or seeing actually, you know, even begin to flourish or whatever, about the kind of work or the sort of projects you might like to do in the future? So let me just sort of qualify what I'm meaning here. I think, you know, both you and I work in a very emergent way with an organization, potential client or whatever, to help them understand what might be really useful for them, and then, you know, co-design something. So yeah, I'm not asking you to sort of say, oh, I want this kind of project. That's not how we operate, of course. It doesn't fit with anything we're saying. But just, you know, for anybody that's watching that says, okay, those things are really interesting. You know, first of all, where can I find out more? You know, what's the kind of work that's starting to take shape for you that you'd like to be, you know, you've mentioned regenerative agriculture, you've mentioned, you know, living systems, healing, okay, I use that word, you know, I know you can do so many different things. We've just sort of scratched the surface, we don't had a little taste here, but it's a place to start. So I'm just curious, yeah, what's, you know, what's sort of emerging for you in the midst of all of this, and in the anticipation that, you know, the next year to whatever will be challenging for many of us on big scales as well, I agree. What's emerging for you? Where do you want to put your energy?
Yeah, it's a big one. It's a big one. It's really strange. I've becoming aware, and maybe this is just for me, and I'm not making out a general pronouncement for anybody else, but is the kind of living really simply and learning some skills. You know, I feel very attracted to go on these woofing stints, you know.
A great name as well.
It is great. We'll have to put something in the link around in the
please do
about this, but you know, sort of actually, you know, learning, you know, skills on organic farms around the world, and you know, kind of learning in community and that sort of thing. So I think it's something really tangible about what are the skills that we need, and how do we you know, those of us who have been kind of separated from that level of contact and kind of manual skills, physical labor, and then on the other hand is actually seeing this big thing called AI and, you know, all of that world, and just thinking, so rather than, you know, me at my ripe old age just kind of hiding away from that, it's like, well, what can I offer in terms of, it's inevitably going to be there, so what support might it need? even if it's just people doing projects slightly differently or something, that supports regenerative thinking in that space as well. And I know that there are people who are exploring actively in that. Sure. And I feel a kind of a tension with, you know, holding the both, really. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, all the things in between and just being available and useful to, you know, whatever is showing up. As we said, it's emergent. We don't always know where those people, organizations are going to be. But yeah, that for me feels like this sort of interesting tension. And what's clear to me at the moment as I'm speaking is, and I know I don't have any in-depth knowledge of either. So there's a huge learning to engage with.
For everybody, you know, I think even for those who are involved in, you know, heavily involved in AI or whatever, there's so much to learn about living systems and community and, you know, whatever is missing for them. So perhaps that's, I mean, you know, as my friend, what my views are on AI, and I'm sort of trying to keep them out of the podcast for now, but I know I'm going to get challenged. Well, with something.
But I'm sure that
it's valid, you know. That's
All have that, right? You know, just, you know, I have two teenage, well, they're in their early 20s now. They're not enamored with that future.
Yeah, absolutely. Which I'm hearing often.
You know,
I'm really hearing
what,
often.
That's not what they want. So I think, you know, I also think intergenerationally around, well, for the length of time I have left, how can I be in service to them and their generation and the kind of lives they want to be able to live? Yeah. So,
absolutely. I love the intergenerationality, let's say, of your focus as well, you know, which I think we've just sort of sown some seeds for a whole load of other conversations. Actually, if you'd like to come back, you'd be most welcome. Let's put it that way. So we're coming up to sort of the end of the episode today. But before we go, I've got five surprise questions, which I'd love to ask you if you're happy to play. There's nothing, you know, particularly tricky or whatever. I just haven't seen them already. So if you're happy to play, let's do that. That would be great. So the first question is, what's one consistent, non-negotiable practice that feels really regenerative for you?
Is taking time pretty much every morning to sense into the day, sense into the energies of the day and the week. I mean, I could spend most of my morning just doing that, right?
Me too, absolutely.
But it feels absolutely a non-negotiable. Yeah.
Fantastic. One thing you change about yourself to have greater impact. It's hard at this stage of life.
You know what? Yeah. I'd love to wave a magic wand and just not be afraid of doing this more. I think, you know, I've just you know, I am happy with writing, and I do have a book that I want to write, and again, just overcoming all the kind of mental blocks that get in the way, I think. Yeah. The mental barriers, and yeah.
Give me a little heads up. Okay, I'm not.
Yeah, I know.
Fantastic.
You can help me out with that.
Someone who's really inspired you, and why?
Oh, I think I'll choose somebody who we both know, and who just popped into my mind right now, which is Eric Parslow.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, because I think, you know, he passed quite a few years ago now, but he was a mentor to me when I was first starting in coaching. And I think, you know, he had inputs in your life as well. And I think there's something, just his mantra was, just because it's simple doesn't make it easy. Mm-hmm. And I think that would apply just as much to regenerative practice as anything else. It's like, you know, there's a beauty and a simplicity in all of what we've been talking about. And simple complex, but it doesn't necessarily make it easy, because we are extracting ourselves from that. We're extracting ourselves from an extractive world mindset, right? So,
it's a real, That's a real challenge, as we both know. And so to bring our conversation to the to an end, let's say today, your biggest aspiration for the world?
So I would like to, I would love for the world to regain its trust in its own body, if that makes sense. So the COVID years, whatever you might think about what was happening in that, one thing that I think was clear is that we our sense of trust in our own bodies and in each other's bodies was really shaken. And actually, it's exactly that trust that we need to regain in order for all this stuff to happen. So, excellent. Yeah.
Beautiful. That feels like a beautiful place to,
yeah,
you know, land our conversation today. Can we learn to trust our bodies, the living systems that we are, and connect with each other from that place?
Mm.
You know, what a different world we could create. And then, you know, if we can harness AI, whatever tech, to that end, you know, we have so much potential to explore, you know. Thank you, Catherine. It's been an absolute pleasure today. I'm sorry we've only got, you know, more or less half an hour or whatever it works out to be. We'd love to invite you back when the time is right and to explore, you know, a whole number of things that we've just touched on today. Would be fantastic. Wonderful.
Yeah, would love to.
Thank you for joining us.